This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This day in sports history. It's March 25th, and on this day in 1979, it was the most unusual ending to an NBA basketball game ever. A game in which several players officially and legitimately played for both teams. Now, to understand what happened on this day, I have to take you back a few months prior to November 8, 1978. Just a few weeks into the NBA season, the Philadelphia 76ers were hosting the New Jersey Nets. The Sixers had a pretty stout lineup with Dr. J, Bobby Jones, Mo Cheeks, Henry Bibby, Daryl Dawkins. The Nets, they had Bernard King. King was only in his second year at this point, but he was already drawing nightly double teams and still managing to score more than 20 a game. In the third quarter, King drove to the basket, and as he went up for a shot, there was contact. King was called for a charge, a call that he, let's just say he vehemently disputed. It did not take long for King to get a technical foul in addition to his personal foul. The problem for King, though, he already had a technical from earlier in the game. So at this point, he's ejected. Still, expressing his displeasure, he kicked a courtside chair on his way to the showers, and a third technical was called on King, but this one was called by a different ref named Richie Powers, and it was also illegal. The Powers had a reputation for giving out technicals like candy from a Pez dispenser. This third tech on King brought Nets coach Kevin Lockery off the bench to question the call, but in a very loud and shouty manner. Powers teed him up not just once, not just twice, but three times as well, which was also illegal. So now Lockery is off to the dressing room. Phil Jackson took over as the coach on the Nets bench. Quick side note, this was Phil Jackson's first head coaching moment. So, again, there's still more than 5 minutes to play in the third quarter. The Nets turned to Eric Money to fill in the scoring gap with King gone. The game went to double OT before the Sixers won 137-133. Money finished with 37 in the loss. But hang on a second. The Nets protested to the league office, saying the excessive technical fouls called by Powers was outside the rules, gave an unfair advantage to the Sixers, and they demanded a replay of the game. NBA Commissioner Larry O'Brien agreed. First, he suspended Powers for 5 games for failure to comply with league procedure. Second, they had to find a date for a replay for the final 17 minutes and 50 seconds. And since the Nets were playing again at Philadelphia on March 25th, that date was selected. But a lot can happen in 4 months. On February 7th, the Sixers and the Nets made a trade with each other. The 76ers sent Ralph Simpson and Harvey Catchings to New Jersey, and in return got Eric Money and Al Skinner. Simpson, Catchings, and of course Money had all played in the game back in November. And now when the teams got together for the replay on this day in 1979, they were on the other bench. The league issued a ruling that the traded players could play in the game with their new teams. 5 minutes, 50 seconds were put on the clock to finish out the third quarter. Everything was reset to this point, meaning all the points scored after this point in November were erased, and the scoreboard was reset to read Philadelphia 84, New Jersey 81. The only other difference is there were three different referees. Powers was not allowed to ref this one. The game progressed, and the 76ers won this time too, 123-117. Now, if you take a look at the box score of this game, Money, Catchings, and Simpson appear under both teams as having officially played for both teams in this game. Money lost points, though. Instead of the 37 he scored in the original double OT game, he officially finished with 27. 23 scored for New Jersey, 4 scored for Philadelphia. He was the only one out of the traded players to score in the makeup portion, and so Money went down in NBA history as the only player to play and score for both teams in the same game. After this one ended, the teams refreshed for the originally scheduled ball game for this date, a game the Sixers also won. Philly and New Jersey met later that year in the first round of the NBA playoffs, with the Sixers winning that series as well. Also on this day, in 1961, it was a wild one in the NCAA tournament as St. Joe's beat Utah 127-120 in quadruple overtime. It's tied for the longest tournament game in NCAA history, and there hasn't been one that's lasted four OTs since. Utah's Bill McGill scored 34 points and pulled down 14 rebounds. McGill was the first black player to play at Utah. St. Joe's was led by Jack Egan's 42 points and 16 rebounds. This was the old third-place game, by the way. St. Joe's had lost to Ohio State two nights before, and Utah was beaten by eventual national champ Cincinnati. The bronze medal game was played until 1981. But here's the thing. St. Joe's win in this game was vacated because of the 1961 points-shaving scandal. I've talked about the 1951 scandal that swept up CCNY and other schools in the New York area, but this scandal dwarfed that one. In the 61 scandal, 476 players were implicated in fixing 43 games between 1957 and 1961. Three of those players played at St. Joe's: Egan, the man who scored 42 in the win, Frank Mashevsky, and Vincent Kempton. Those three took a total of $2,750 to shave points in several games that season and were expelled from St. Joe's a month later. In 1935, Babe Ruth hit his final home run of his career. Well, he actually hit three of them on this day, playing for the Boston Braves. He played his final game on the 30th. And in 1973, Wilt Chamberlain played his last game, scoring only a point, but grabbing 18 rebounds. Interesting fact, Wilt never fouled out of a game in his 14-year career. And today's non-sports Did You Know? There's a Seinfeld episode about Michigan's generous recycling compensation that is credited with costing the state millions of dollars every year. That's all for today. I'll have more tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans. We've got some exciting news to share with you. Six of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote. Cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all six of them. Again, every vote counts, and we got to show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.